recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and this is the 17th or maybe the 18th. Hang on a second. It is the 18th of March, 2013, and this is the Fair Recovery subscriber call for the AR Library. So welcome, everyone, and we've got a bunch of questions today, so I'll just start off here. Rick, it will be 3 years since full disclosure next month regarding my husband's affair and sexual addiction. We're doing great. Thanks a lot for your help, Fair Recovery, and other resources. Sexually, I'm still during sex. I just don't know what else to do. It's like a battle between my conscious and unconscious self. I've even been trying the eyes open sex and nothing. I know I'm safe as anyone can be, and I know I'm loved. So why is a part of me still getting in the way of me being all in? I still am fighting some ways I avoid emotional intimacy just in the day-to-day interactions, too. So how do I change? You know, I think that the length of time it takes people to get fully comfortable again varies. I mean, I don't know that there's a set formula. I think that what you're doing, though, is spot on to begin with. It's not giving up the battle and just continuing to face it. I think being able to talk about it with your mate is important. As the two of you just talk about the struggle, what you're going to find is that intimacy alone is enough to help move you forward to some extent. Another thing that I think is useful is making sure that that it's not as much about effort, but it's about recreating or creating something new and different between the two of you. It's not like a recapturing what you once had. So sometimes doing things such as rewriting sexual scripts and going to seminars on marriage, or just going to seminars on sex, if you can find any really good ones. Another thing would be reading books out loud with each other. I believe the more you talk, the more comfortable the two of you can become with one another. And it's an ongoing conversation. And that's all marriage is, in some ways, is that continuing, ongoing conversation. So don't stop the conversation. Continue to speak with each other about it. Bring it up when it's an issue. Allow yourself to try to create and think about what would be interesting for you and work it not just from what he wants. Finally, I know that if you take the lead and not just try to respond to him, sometimes you being in control is something that'll help and may help you be more engaged when you feel like you're in charge. It may be easier to participate. I hope those things help. You may also be bumping into issues that were there prior to the infidelity. So this may just be a personal growth issue. And I suspect if you stay with it, obviously it will get better over time. Just don't give up. You'll get there eventually. Next question, understanding shame. I've been trying to understand shame for 3 years. Can you give some examples? How do I know if it's an issue? I've read enough about it, but I'm unable to compute. It seems obvious in some people who display it with classic signs. What about those who don't appear to be shameful but have it buried? Well, let's start by defining shame. To me, shame is an identity message that somehow I am bad. And that particular message sort of drives that individual's behavior. In fact, shame will drive someone to really work at image management for fear that if people really saw them as they see themselves, that they wouldn't be accepted. And a lot of times those messages come not only from people who gave probably incorrect or really hard messages or unloving messages while they were growing up, but they also come from failure. and the way we interpret, I guess, the way we live and what happens in life. So the classic signs of shame, I think, that we see are when somebody's always beating themselves up and putting themselves down, and you just see the shame all over them. But those who don't appear to be shameful, actually, those people usually appear to be very, very self-centered and prideful. The opposite of shame is pride. All you do, it's all about my identity and the belief that it's a requirement-based system. It's the belief that somehow I've got to be good enough, or I should have been good enough and I wasn't. So people who are incredibly prideful actually have a lot of shame, and people who have a lot of shame actually have a lot of pride, and they just try to hide the other side of it. You're just changing the valence from positive to negative, but in some ways it's the same thing. There's, with people with pride, there's a tremendous fear they'll fail. People with shame, live with what they perceive to be the reality that they have failed. So I would say they haven't just buried it, those who aren't displaying shame, but what they're doing is they're hiding it behind pride. And how do you know if it's an issue for you? I think everybody struggles at times with that image issue of that angst of, am I good, am I not? The thing about shame and pride is they make you both very, very self-centered. People who are not shameful and prideful have the ability just to be compassionate and concerned about other people. So if you want to determine whether it's an issue for you, just decide how much of you're about you where it's hard for you to even consider others, but instead you're concerned more about what others think of you. At that point, if that's the case, then I can guarantee you pride and shame will be an issue. So hopefully that'll help answer your question. Next. Addiction and addicts. Can you explain again how you have to have an addiction but not be an addict? That's interesting. I'm not quite sure about that question. Sorry about that. I would say that someone, just off the top of my head, someone that really has an addiction probably is an addict, I guess right off the top of my head here. But the other thing I would say is that there are lots of ways to define addictions. Sometimes someone may be OCD. That doesn't make him an addict. Someone can be incredibly compulsive. Some people can have the other way to think about that, I'm just kind of rambling here now, but someone can have an addiction too and yet also recognize from a spiritual perspective that they're a new creation, that isn't them. I mean, ultimately in Romans chapter 7, what Paul says is, the things I want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, those are the things I do. So if I do the things I don't want to do, it's no longer I who do it, he says. And so all he's saying is there is an identity transplant that comes when we accept Jesus from a Christian perspective. Therefore, I'm no longer, the addiction doesn't define me. It may be part of my old nature, but it's not me. And maybe that's the best definition of how someone can have an addiction and not be an addict, because I would say they're a new creation. Even though in their old nature, they have to remember that old nature where that addiction lies, because if they're not walking in love and walking in the Spirit, then eventually they will go back to the old nature and do what they kind of come by naturally. Next question, recovery. I found out a week ago my husband has been having an affair for the last 6 months. And by the way, I'm really sorry. He left because he wasn't sure he wanted to end the relationship with his affair partner. He came back the next evening saying, since I was willing to forgive him, he was willing to work things out. He said he told her that and couldn't have contact with her anymore. Ever since then, he's been extremely disengaged and depressed. I understand he's grieving the loss of his AP, but he still has had contact with her. I've been asking him, and he's been honest with me. He told me she texted him once asking what he expected as far as my reaction, more or less, if I was going to out her. And he called her yesterday to see if she had safely landed in Florida on a trip. Am I supposed to give him time to end this relationship and completely disengage? I know it will take time for him to get over her. He claims he loves her. Should I give him time or tell him he needs to leave if he hasn't cut or can't cut all the ties with her? And if he really agrees to cut all ties, how long do I give him to grieve and be disengaged with me? Okay, well, that's a good one. So, you know, one of the things I would say, he needs to cut off contact if he's going to move on with her. And I think I would just say to her, look, or say to him, if you want her, then I would sit there and say, go to her. But the bottom line is, I'm not interested in being in this. And I know for us to go forward, I need you to be able to terminate it with her. And if not, you need to move out until you can get to that place. I'm sure that he feels guilty and doesn't want to hurt her. At the same time, he needs to be able, and we won't move on from her if he doesn't stop it. I mean, the problem is, he'll get to this place where he's going back and forth between you and her, and it'll just become a very, very destructive pattern in the long run. So let's say he does say, okay, I'm not contacting her anymore, and I'll even let you see all the contact she makes with me and let you respond to her. But there needs to be a kind of a unilateral decision on his part to end it. If that's the case, then you probably, because of his ambivalence, you want to give him some time to work through it, but you also want to have some positive times between the two of you. It can't just be about the loss of her. In this situation, I hope that you get involved in EMSO, something like this. EMSO is going to be really helpful where he can talk to other guys. It would also be very helpful for him to be involved in Hope for Healing. Again, where he is a group of other guys, or to be in therapy, because I think learning to gain perspective and work through something like this and letting go of the relationship and beginning to see it for what it really is important. Most likely, you know, he uses or has used the relationship as almost an antidepressant, something he can look at to help pick him up, and he's got to begin to choose to think about something very different as he goes forward. And he may need help to do that, but I would give him a chance to work through it if he makes the decision and cuts off all contact with her. Let's see. Next. My husband confessed he fell in love with his AP and that he had a relationship with her for 6 months. He moved out about 5 weeks and is closer to her. Last week, he told me and his family they both decided to end the relationship after I informed him I was exposing the affair. My question is, if my husband has had such strong feelings for his AP, parentheses, love, close parentheses, how do I reconnect with him if he truly ended the affair? He's been torn on what to do since D-Day and asked to keep communications going so he could reconnect with me. He's gone back and forth for the last 6 weeks. And how do I reconnect when he lives separately? Well, I think letting him know that you're not going to be in a triad and that when he's worked this out to contact you is probably an important thing. The concern I've got is, and I wondered, you know, did you expose the relationship, or is he saying he's coming back as a result or in order to keep you from exposing it. I don't know, but what always concerns me about a situation like this is if somebody ends an affair bilaterally where the two of them agree to do it, a lot of times they'll keep checking on each other trying to determine or trying to see how the other person is. It's far better if someone ends an affair unilaterally where it's their decision. And as difficult as it is, they make the necessary decision to know which way they're going to go. Otherwise, there's that continual back and forth piece that you're talking about. I think it's good that he's asked to keep the communication open with you. But right now, I would just say, and he may need to be separated, but you need to start finding times to be together. Again, doing something like EMSO would be really useful in this sort of situation simply because it allows the two of you to begin to communicate on a regular basis about this in a very constructive and helpful way, even though there's a separation. And, you know, if you'll do that, I think you'll find it to be very, very useful, just having that communication and the coursework you can do together to begin to grow back together, reconnect, and so that he can begin to understand, because I'm sure this will be a process. Now, in terms of whether or not he really loves her, I will tell you that it could very well be limerence and not love. In fact, I don't even know that you can learn to love somebody fully within 6 months, but I can tell you she does make him feel really good about himself. Something else that might be useful is find the resource on our website, 31 Reasons to Stop an Affair. I think if you read that, it might be very useful, as well as reading the articles, the latest news articles on emotional affairs, which will talk some about love. You know, hopefully that will give him some direction, and I hope you're in an EMSO course. If not, I hope you can get there. And for I wrote in a few weeks ago concerning communication and how to talk through temptation, etc., between me and my husband going forward. He's dealt with pornography and lying for 7 years. I also mentioned that we were in the midst of a meltdown about whether or not a double take is a sin. We're still working through your response and will likely have a follow-up question. But for the time being, I'm just feeling plain discouraged, deeply discouraged. I had two heavy reminders of his past pornography / objectification issue. On Saturday, we took our daughter to her first swim lesson, and the other mom in the group was basically naked with everything hanging out. I felt mortified and beyond uncomfortable and knew he was tempted to look at her if he wasn't already doing so. Meanwhile, I felt like a big fat lobster, despite the fact that I'm very committed to looking nice since we had our baby. Then on Sunday, we went to church and he was holding Grace, our baby, in the back of the service to let me have a rest. The sermon was on marriage and the pastor had just gotten married and was ecstatic about his wife. And then when I went back to get Grace, I saw several really beautiful women standing in front of Steve, who I know he was tempted to look at if he didn't just go ahead and do so. It put me into such a dark place. Honestly, Rick, I can't stand not feeling beautiful around my husband. Other husbands compliment their wives in public, and you can tell they're really into their wives. Meanwhile, other men are complimenting me in public, and Steve barely even notices me. He later told me that sometimes he struggles with spending time thinking about me due to his past sin and how it's affected his mind, but that he's trying. He will eke out a compliment that sounds super forced here and there. It's so discouraging. This weekend was such a low, and yesterday I found myself feeling that I don't know how I'll be able to stay in this marriage. Honestly, it's hard to describe the level of sadness and discouragement and feeling of deep dislikes I feel toward my husband. If you have any thoughts, I'd appreciate it. Thanks, Rick. Okay, well, the first thing that I see you're doing, and I hope I'm not trying to upset you further because I know this is all really hard, but you're doing a lot of mind reading, and you're telling yourself what Steve is thinking or what your husband is thinking, and you're telling yourself that he's looking, and in reality, you don't know how he was looking or whether he was guarding his eyes unless he actually told you. So one of the suggestions I would have that will keep you from feeling so low is tell yourself you don't know what your husband's looking at and what he's not looking at. You don't know what he's thinking or what he's not thinking. If you want to know, you ultimately have to ask. You'd be able to make a great living as a seer or a fortune teller or something if you could really read people's minds. So please check with him before assuming that he's looking at things, because he may not be. The person that's comparing you against the other women right now may be you even more than your husband. One of the saddest things and outcomes of sexual addiction is it has this strange tendency to give women a cornea transplant where they'll begin looking at other women and comparing themselves against them, you know, and then get into their own name-calling, calling themselves names because they feel like they come up lacking and wanting. At the same time, they're angry at their husbands, you know, accusing their husbands of doing the very thing that in reality they're doing, which is scanning other women. Whether or not your husband's scanning women, I don't know. But I do know that the end result of this is it's caused you to begin to look at other women and then project that onto your husband, assuming he's doing the same. I would encourage you to ask your husband if you want to know whether or not he's looking at someone. There's nothing wrong with temptation. All of us will be tempted. You'll be tempted to look at them and compare yourself. He'll be tempted to look, you know, just to get mood altering. The temptation isn't the problem. If temptation defined us, then the person with the most temptation would ultimately be the vilest person, and that would be Jesus. And I don't consider Jesus to have been vile. God even put the tree of the knowledge, or it was God who put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden, not that wasn't a weed. It wasn't Satan that put it there. And the reason temptation is there is that ultimately, you know, we can make a choice of love, where we forego something else we're interested in for the sake of the one we really love. Your husband has to fight his battle about looking at women, and ultimately that isn't something I don't know that you can fully control, but you'll also have your own battle to fight when it comes to looking at women because of the damage that's been done to you, and it's really, really difficult. I do hope he'll get to the place where he learns to compliment you. One other thing, I don't know that other husbands do such a great job at complimenting their wives in public. I mean, they may, the ones you're around, the ones I know, sometimes do it and sometimes they don't. And they may or may not be really into their wives. A lot of people who appear to be really into somebody, they're also doing that to potentially hide something else. I mean, you just never know what reality is. So don't assume that their reality is already so much better than your own. It may or may not be. But just look at the progress the two of you are making. I know that God doesn't give you a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power and love and of a sound mind. And when that fear comes, it means that you're probably jumping time zones and you're somewhere out in the future trying to imagine a situation before God's giving you the grace to deal with it. If you just come back to the present and stop mind reading and just look around and look in your husband's eyes, you may see that there's a lot of caring in there. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be a battle because you're so wounded. And I know it's hard after you've had a child. At the same time, I bet you'll find a way to begin to move forward. And as he goes forward, if y'all are doing hope for healing, I mean, harboring hope, which I think you are, I mean, not harboring hope, excuse me, EMSO, I think you'll find he'll find ways to begin to understand you and to compliment you and to move forward. If he still struggles, the other thing he might try would be something like hope for healing, because I think it would give him the encouragement and the direction he needs to change and to move forward. I guess maybe to respond to you in some new and different ways. So it looks like that is finally all of our questions. I want to thank everybody. I know that there was a lot today, a bunch of questions. So thank you. And I hope everybody has a great week, and I look forward to talking with you guys next week to healing.